This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 1-888-408-6141. That's 1-888-408-6141 or tryzona.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's guest is the Naughty Nutritionist. She's Dr. Kayla Daniel, and her website, the byline is Telling the Truth That's Too Hot to Handle. And part one is a hot expose on a popular supplement, FCLO, fermented cod liver oil, which is popular. It's kind of a fad. But today's guest, Dr. Kayla Daniel, believes that it's not helpful and it may even be dangerous and harmful. So she's blown the whistle on it in a free report, which you can obtain from her website, drkayladaniel.com. It's entitled Hook, Line, and Stinker, The Truth About Fermented Cod Liver Oil. And, okay, so there's more to you than this fermented cod liver oil controversy. Obviously, you have a deep background in nutrition. And you're known for the best-selling book, Nourishing Broth, which is still a very influential book because I think you're way ahead of the time because broth is now so mainstream. And when you wrote about it, I think it was kind of an emerging trend. So tell us about the benefits of nourishing broth.
Yes, I first wrote about the healing benefits of broth, I think, in 2003, and then it started to take off, and that article was quoted over and over and over. And in fall 2015, Sally Fallon and I published Nourishing Broth, and we're the co-authors of that. And the whole broth fad, it's called a broth fad, but the truth is it goes all the way back to the Stone Age when people didn't have a pot to cook in. And
To paraphrase a popular term, they didn't have a pot to cook in.
Right,
okay. I caught that.
So everyone, all the great doctors through the ages, and people like Florence Nightingale were promoting broth for healing. Indeed, Nightingale brought the celebrity chef of her era to the Crimean War to make good broth to keep the soldiers healthy and help the wounded ones recover. So it's got a long, long history. And in the 19th and early 20th century, there was much research on gelatin. And, of course, when we're making homemade broth and we get it nice and jiggly, there's plenty of gelatin and collagen in there. So it's an incredible healing food, and one of the primary things would be how it can heal the gut. And we've all heard, first heal the gut. No matter what your symptoms are, first address the healing of the gut. And it heals leaky gut, and I could go on and on. There are people who have had severe cases of colitis, for example, or Crohn's, in such severe cases they're about to undergo surgery, and after a few weeks, months of doing a lot of broth, they really start to heal.
And what is it about broth that seems so therapeutic? Why is it so beneficial, say, to the digestive tract, restorative?
Well, there's not one thing, but there's some of the amino acids are very important for soothing and healing the inflammation in the gut. And broth is high in the amino acids glycine, proline, and glutamine. They're conditionally essential amino acids.
For repair. And they're actually for collagen repair. They seem to be helpful for that.
Very important. And many paleo folks who focus on eating chops and steaks and muscle meat, they can actually be deficient in some of those conditionally essential amino acids.
Yeah, let's drill down on that a little bit. That's a very interesting concept because some people think that the paleo diet is porterhouse steaks and lean, you know, chicken breasts. But actually, it's important to get a wide variety of proteins from what's called offal. And it's not so awful, but some people think it is, to eat kidneys and liver and other organs. And of course, when you use the bone marrow, and when you render bones in a broth, you're going to get those components, right?
Well, you're going to get, if you're using the carcass for making broth, you're going to get a whole lot of very crucial elements to being healthy. And then we also need to be eating the liver and the heart and the gizzards and some of the awful things. And our ancestors, in their wisdom, and it was not just because they were frugal, but I think they instinctively knew that we were meant to eat all parts of the animal.
Mm-hmm.
So not just the muscle meats, but also the carcass, also the organ meats.
Hmm. And so for those who are maybe squeamish about that, broth is a bit of a shorthand into accessing the nutritional benefits of other parts of the animal.
That's right. I mean, it's a way to get the benefits in the bones because we can't really just eat the bones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as well. I kind of remember the way my grandmother used to eat a chicken, and there wasn't much left. It's like, did you really need to eat the ends of the chicken joints? And, you know, literally they would, you know, almost suck the marrow out of the bones. And, you know, it was a whole different style of eating. And that, you know, harkens back to the experience of Native Americans. They utilized all parts of the animal, you know, for not just food, but shelter and for fuel and so on.
Yes, it honors the animal. And that's what we need for good health.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So one knock that I've seen lately against broth, and it doesn't mean that it's bad for everyone, but there's people with a certain condition called histamine intolerance, which means that they've got high levels of histamine, which produces allergic responses. They have all kinds of bizarre allergy-like symptoms that may not be related to typical foods like wheat or dairy or something that can be identified. But on a low histamine diet, isn't broth a no-no, if I'm not mistaken?
That's a subject I'm exploring, and I haven't reached any strong opinions on it at this point, but what I can say is that people with histamine intolerance definitely do not do well with broth that has been cooked for a long, long time or that has been stored for a long time in the refrigerator.
Mm, that's interesting.
So that's pretty typical of any foods. They need to be eating fresh foods and not foods that have been sitting around.
Well, okay, that's interesting because preparation is an issue then in terms of the qualities of the broth. So I got to tell you that I'll eat a chicken or, you know, sometimes I'll eat beef with a bone in, and then I'll throw it into a crock pot, which is an electric crock pot that I just turn on and I walk away from it. And it sometimes just goes for days and days. And I think to myself, gee, the more it cooks, the better it is because it renders everything down. And you're saying that if you do it for too long, potentially it could backfire, that there could be some adverse effects?
Well, for some people, yes. And there's quite a few people who cannot tolerate the glutamine part of broth.
Mm-hmm.
And glutamine, of course, is a conditionally essential amino acid. We need it to be healthy. And some people desperately need it, but yet can't tolerate it well.
Hmm.
So a short-cooked broth will have lower quantities of glutamine.
Oh.
Of course, the catch is it's also going to have lower quantities of proline and glycine,
yep,
and arginine and everything else. There's less nutrition in it.
Mm-hmm.
But for some people, the initial healing stages will involve a short cooked broth with more meat.
Oh, that's a fascinating insight. I didn't even realize that. Okay. So any more to add on the subject of broth? I mean, you can add other ingredients besides, you can actually put some vegetables into the broth, or, you know, sometimes maybe the less desirable parts of the vegetables that are cosmetically unattractive but not rotten, maybe the ends of carrots or the peels of scallions or something like that, or the parts of the celery that you don't want to put into your tuna salad. That can go in the broth too, right?
Sure. Just keep in mind that the quality of your ingredients are going to affect the taste and nutritional quality of the broth too. But, well, you know, what we're talking about here really is how you can take it as, say, a meat tea, and some people will just drink straight broth as, mm-hmm. you know, a substitute for coffee or tea, and we can also make soups and stews, and I often recommend to people that they dig up all their old cookbooks and just adapt their favorite soup and stew recipes to include genuine bone broth, because some mm-hmm. of those old recipes may just have, you know, adding the meat, so we yeah. want to start with bones.
Well, you know what? Nowadays, I use my soup stock, which, by the way, when it goes in the refrigerator, it comes out like an aspic, so I know it's got gelatin in it. You know, it kind of it wobbles. It's not a liquid. And then I will throw that into as a soup stock or flavoring when I make stews. And that's a useful way. I mean, you don't have to drink it straight. You can. Some people, it's fashionable now to drink broth as a beverage, you know, straight as a health beverage. But you can also incorporate it in soups and stews, right?
Right. And when most of us make broth, we're going to be adding onions and celery and maybe carrots at the beginning, and they're going to cook for a long time. And at the end of the cooking, we'll throw them out because, you know, they're pretty limp and done at that point, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
So some people will enjoy the broth just straight like that, and other people will take it and, say, make chicken rice soup or minestrone soup or bean soup. Use a ham hock to make a bean soup, and you will have a reputation as a cook.
Oh, yeah. It's a magical ingredient. Okay, so now with the popularization of broth, you get broth like in cartons. You can buy it at a health food store. You can buy it, you know, online. It's a popular thing, beef broth, chicken broth, you know, healthy, with all kinds of attributes, healthy, traditional, et cetera. Now, are those broths okay, or should you really make authentic broth at home by yourself, or can you hack it and use that shortcut of buying pre-prepared broth?
Most of the cartons that are labeled broth that you'll find at the health food stores or supermarkets are not genuine bone broth.
Mm-hmm.
They may be a meat-flavored broth, but they're not a genuine bone broth. And you'll notice they don't have much flavor. They don't gel. There's just various clues, and if you look at the ingredient list of some of those, you'll see things like yeast extract and other things.
Flavoring, that are which is MSG.
Added to give yeah. it a flavor.
Yeah.
And now with the bone broth fad, other people are, you know, putting out powders, you know, vanilla flavored
yeah.
broth powder.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, spare me. You know, I'll have my vanilla separate,
yeah.
please.
Well, that's it. Because really, this always happens. You know, you start out with a really sound concept, you know, whether it be macrobiotics or paleo. And then after a while, it becomes popular. And then you get the macrobiotic snacks, the paleo desserts, the, you know, instant bone broth, you know, that, you know, you tear open the package and add it to hot water. And there you are in the office at the water cooler. And, you know, you just turn the hot tap on. You have instant ancestral diet. That's not how it works, right?
Well, you know, they're making genuine homemade bone broth. It may be a challenge when people first learn how to do it. But once you've got the hang of it, it goes very quickly. And it is a fast food because you can just add a few ingredients, say, in the morning in your crock pot, turn it on, go to work, or do it overnight. It's not like you have to be standing over the stove all day. So with a little planning and a few new habits in place, it is something you can make pretty easily yourself.
Indeed. And so let's mention the book. You're co-author of the book Nourishing Broth. And it's still in print, correct? It's a book that was out.
Yes, and it's still selling really well, too. Yeah, part of the broth fad.
Right. Nourishing Broth, an Old-Fashioned Remedy for a Modern World, and you can find it at the usual sources, also at the website, drkayladaniel.com. All right, in the remaining time, let's review the soy story, because it's a sorry story, according to you, right?
Yes, there's a dark side to America's favorite health food, and soy has been linked to malnutrition, thyroid disorders, immune system breakdown, attention deficit disorders. It's one of the top allergies. It even can contribute, cause, or accelerate the growth of some cancers. And it's even linked to some types of heart disease. And these are some of the things it supposedly prevents, and it does not.
Indeed. And is part of the problem now that it's all, or virtually all, GMO soy, that is the vast majority of soy that we get, is GMO, or is it inherently a property of soy? And the GMO may be a tad worse, but it's more about soy as being kind of an unnatural food for humans.
Well, some of the problems, like the plant estrogens that are in soy, they're in all soybeans, organic and otherwise. But GMO makes everything far, far worse, both for us personally and for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
But the number of people who are allergic to soy has gone up dramatically since the first GMO soybeans went on the market.
And why is that? It extends the allergenicity somehow?
Yeah, it just makes everything worse. That would be the easiest way to describe it. And it being in so many products and more people exposed. And, of course, many, many of our children now are just plain sick anyway. They're born quite sick, and the GMO soybeans are making things worse.
Mm-hmm. And I think I got this out of you from our last interview. You are not inalterably opposed to small amounts of unrefined soy for some people who are tolerant to soy. I think that you're not taking the position that, you know, soy is like the cross to the vampire, right?
Well, I enjoy some good miso soup and a little tempeh once in a while, a little tofu once in a while. I like to make it with some nice tamari and shiitake mushrooms, and mm-hmm. I find that delicious. But it's a once-in-a-while thing, although miso soup is so wonderful, you can really have that pretty much every day, because think about it, you know, a bowl of it's still only going to involve a teaspoon or so of the soybean paste.
Okay.
And it is actually genuinely fermented, if we want to talk about a really fermented product, miso.
Yeah. Right. There we can talk fermentation, because it is, I mean, that's a traditional process that's very ancient, and it makes sense. It really does break down it makes the nutrients in the soy more accessible.
It does, and the miso is very health-promoting, and the super soy product for health is natto, because the bacteria produce vitamin K2, and that's what we really need.
Mm-hmm. Right. It is one of the main sources of natto, that along with fermented cheeses, which is that heart-healthy, bone-healthy nutrient that many of us lack. And of course, fermented foods, this is a good segue to fermented foods. You're a big fan of fermented foods, natural homemade fermented foods and unpasteurized products that we can buy, like sauerkraut and so on, right?
I enjoy them in small quantities. I think some people have taken the fermentation fad a little too far, doing too high quantities of some of these products. And I think they're meant to be more condiment on the plate, and yes, they're certainly beneficial that way.
In other words, they're people who are like trying to stoke their microbiome. They're so conscious of the importance of the gut bacteria that they're trying to supercharge their intestinal tracts with massive amounts of unpasteurized sauerkraut. But maybe all you need is a little bit to get things going in that compost heap in your gut.
Well, very much like you were discussing earlier, sometimes people who say need to increase their vitamin A or vitamin D, maybe a supplement is a better choice. And if people really need to build a whole new microbiome, maybe some good, well-chosen probiotics might be a better solution.
Mm-hmm. Well, good.
And then, later, using small quantities of fermented products like sauerkraut or kimchi or beet kvass as part of a rich and balanced diet.
And the latter is a fermented milk, right? Kvass?
Well, there's various kvasses. I was thinking beet kvass, I'm fond of. But
wow.
There's many kinds.
And another popular variant on that is fermented coconut. Is that something that is realistic as a fermented product?
I don't have any experience with that, so
I mean, it's said to combine the soothing properties and healing properties of coconut with the benefits of, the probiotic. But I guess neither of us are the world's authorities on fermented coconut milk.
I don't have any experience with that personally. It may be wonderful or not. What I think we both know is that fermented is sort of a magic word that a lot of people like to bandy about these days.
Mm-hmm. And so caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. Don't succumb to claims that may be over the top. As with fermented cod liver oils, we need to be discerning consumers, not just jump on every popular health bandwagon. And there to protect us and ever vigilant is Dr. Kayla Daniel, the Naughty Nutritionist. You got a website at drkaylaDaniel. That's KAYLA Daniel.com. And you also have a practice. Your practice is located where?
I'm based in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I have clients all over the world.
Mm-hmm. So it's possible for people to access you long distance. Say they want some, they have a health problem that they've encountered, they want some diet advice, they're stuck, and they can contact you.
Yes, it's so amazing with technology now. We can be face-to-face on Skype, and somebody can be in Norway, and I can be in New Mexico, and we could be talking. It's wonderful.
How could they possibly be sick with all the wonderful fresh fish in Norway? It's impossible, isn't it?
Well, the whole world is quite toxic now, and people's diets and lifestyles, there's so many hazards. It's very challenging.
Indeed. All right. Well, thanks for being with us, and I appreciate your outspoken and courageous stand. Calling it as it is, in your opinion, on a popular product, a product that we may want to think twice about. That's in part one of today's podcast, Fermented Cod Liver Oil and some of its potential downsides with Dr. Kayla Daniel. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.